Again, I thank y'all for the privilege of being here. I grew up Baptist. I don't know if any of you have grown up Baptist. And so it's kind of hard for me to stay behind the pulpit. You know, so I may move a little bit this morning. Again, thank you for the privilege of being here, Andy. Thank you for, I sent out an SOS. I'm available on 1212. Is there anybody who would take me up on the offer? Andy did, so thank you. Let me pray. Father, thank you for this opportunity now to talk about the application of Psalm 2 in the life of our denomination and through World Witness in places as diverse as post-Christian Europe, as sub-Saharan Africa, and a Muslim country like Pakistan. Father, work in our hearts that which is well-pleasing in your sight. For I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. My name is Lee Shalnut. I'm the pastor of the Huntersville ARP Church. I've been there for 10 years. Before that, I did a church plant and then pastored a church in Albemarle, North Carolina. I've been in pastoral ministry for going on 26, 27 years. And as I'm getting older, I began to think, what should I be doing for the remainder of my years of ministry in the kingdom? The Lord had been working on my heart from a young age, you know, being like some of the young ones here and having missionaries come. And we used to have those slide presentations where they would drop down, you know, you didn't see the slides. And those didn't bore me to tears. I actually enjoyed those. And the Lord worked in my heart then as a child. And then when I became an ARP in 1987, I'm not an ARP blue blood, but I'm pretty close. You know, I don't have the old ARP names, but I've been in the ARP for a long time. The first church I was in was the White Oak ARP Church down in Georgia, and they were strong in missions. They supported missions throughout the world. And there were some old-time ARP missionaries that had been living and working for decades in Pakistan who came and spoke. And that just really got me going. And through the years, the Lord has given me opportunities to work alongside of, in a volunteer basis, with World Witness. And that's led me to where I am today, where I'm about to go full-time with World Witness as the director of discipleship ministries in two countries, in Pakistan and in Rwanda. So this, if you know much about ARP missions, World Witness, there have historically been a couple of fields. There has been Pakistan. We've been there since the early 1900s. And there's been Mexico. And when I came in ARP, those were the two fields. Then they added Russia when the wall fell. And then they went into Turkey when they had an opportunity to be in Turkey. And now we're in various countries of Europe, and now there's an opportunity to go into Rwanda. And in Rwanda and in Pakistan, the new ministry field is being called the Barnabas Ministry. It's a discipleship and support ministry of World Witness. Next slide. Why Barnabas? Of course, if you know your scriptures, if you know the book of Acts, you know that this man, Joseph, who's also called by the apostles Barnabas, which means son of encouragement. Next slide, please. This is truly intended to be a ministry of encouragement. Encouragement to missionaries and encouragement to national, international pastors. Next slide, please. The top picture is some of the Pakistani brothers. The middle picture is our own Michael Cochran in the blue sweater. He came from our church in Huntersville, and he and his wife are now in Gloucester, and they're planning an FQ church, Evangelical Presbyterian Church of England and Wales. The other two men are FQ pastors, fabulous ministers, great, great, great brothers. The bottom is a seminary student in Ukraine, in Kyiv, that also helped. Next, please. It's to be an encouraging World Witness field for our own missionaries, trying to come alongside of them in their labors. You know, you go to the mission field and you face all kinds of problems. It's learning a new culture, learning a new language, just the normal battles of life. And then throw on top of that the spiritual warfare that's just jacked up once you're on the mission field, it seems. And it's very easy for our missionaries to get discouraged and not be in there for the long haul. So part of my labor is to encourage our existing missionaries on the field. Next slide, please. The mission of my ministry will be to strengthen the mission of international churches by encouraging and mentoring international pastors and future leaders, by facilitating leadership training programs, and by encouraging our missionaries on the field in their evangelistic teaching and church planning efforts. Next slide, please. This started with my work with one individual, the Reverend Zeeshan Sadiq, a wonderful brother, and I consider him a brother, consider him a son, and I've been working with him for nearly 15 years. Next slide, please. The way it started was, I was, again, church planning, then became the pastor of a small church in Albemarle, and I still had that itch of doing something with missions. So I went to a World Witness office in Greenville, and the executive director at that time was Reverend Frank Van Dalen. Frank's a Kiwi who served the World Witness field in Pakistan for at least a decade, if not more. Through Frank's efforts, a whole presbytery was planted in Karachi, which is phenomenal. Frank's just a wonderful guy. He was the executive director. And I said, Frank, is there anything I could do to help you out? He said, yes, I got something for you. Mentor Zeeshan. Guide him through a Western theological education. He's got an education from Pakistan, but it's not that strong. We want to develop him theologically, but not merely theologically. We want him to be a strong spiritual leader. Next slide, please. And my brother is that now, and I'm so grateful just to have had a part in his life, in his training. He's earned his MA now from Erskine Theological Seminary. He's working on THM with them. He pastors the Bethlehem ARP Church in Saiwal. He's the secretary of the ARP Synod there in Pakistan. He also serves on the board of PAC-7. I don't know if you've ever heard of the thing called SAT-7. It's sort of a satellite television ministry into the Muslim world, particularly in Arabic and Farsi. PAC-7 is something like that, but it's being broadcast into the Muslim world of Pakistan, and where the languages are Urdu and Punjabi. So, next slide, please. What opportunities lie ahead now for me? That's what I've done. I've worked with one guy. Next slide, please. There are three, please. The first one is to continue working with those World Witness missionaries to encourage them. We've got a bunch of missionaries in Europe, and there are really two groups. We've got this group called Bridge Europe. And those are basically the ones who used to be in Turkey. Now, because of the strife in Turkey and persecution in Turkey, they've moved to other places in Europe where there are Muslim refugee communities. So we've got them in Strasbourg, missionaries in Strasbourg and Basel, particularly. And we've got some that have been in Paris. And they are seeking to reach Muslim refugees with the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ and connect them to churches. Okay, that's called Bridge Europe. But then we've got a bunch of other missionaries in Europe. We've got missionaries in Spain, in Wales, in England, in Lithuania, and in Germany, and had to work and still got to work with us now in national hands in Poland. And those are the ones I'll be seeking to encourage in my travels. Next slide, please. The second is the one that I've been working at for some time, but I've only been working with one individual. Now the desire is to broaden that ministry, and that is to continue to work with Zeeshan because he is now a good, strong leader in the ARP Synod there, but to search for additional Zeeshans. Because we want to be able, by God's grace, to develop and raise up leaders who then lead others and disciple others and teach others. So we'll be looking for other Zeeshans to come alongside of him. And to Lord willing, get to that, what we want to put in place is a leadership pastoral training program that's aimed at pastors in ARP churches and other churches. We'd love to reach others as well, but not merely the pastors. There's some friction points within denominations, there always are, and some of the friction points within the Pakistani culture are between pastors and elders. And it's in part because of the tribal culture that they're in. And so we want to reach pastors, but we also want to reach elders. And we don't want to just reach this generation. We're looking at the next generation. So the 20-something-year-olds, we want to try to reach them. And And we want to also continue other works, and I'm about to go into those other works in Pakistan. Next slide, please. The Pastoral Leadership Training Program is a modular conference style of training, probably going 3 times a year, 2 weeks at a time, once in the fall, once in the spring, and once in the summer. But in the summer, head to the mountains, Lord willing, not down in the Punjab where it's going to be 120 degrees. Rather be in the foothills of the Himalayas if we can swing it. But it's to be training those pastors predominantly, and then training, helping them train and work with their elders, and then working with that younger generation. We'll be using MT3, and I'm going to explain MT3 further, and other ARP pastors. That's what I'm going to be searching for, ARP pastors who will kind of do what I've done with Zeeshan for the years. It's just be kind of a mentor and a guide and a confidant via the internet with him. We want to replicate that with as many of those brothers as we can. And so, Andy, you know, I'm jotting your name down. Your name's going to be on the list. All right. Then, again, the next generation as well. Next slide, please. Why is that a training program? The ARP Synod in Pakistan is 3 times as large as we are. I mean, they're just about 100,000. Okay. Yet, they are, the church has been there since, again, the early 1900s. And yet the church is very young and it's very weak. It's the product of a people movement. Now, back before there was a Pakistan, all that area was part of what country?
India.
Okay. And India has what sort of system, social system? Caste system. And the Christians who are there now, and that includes the ARP church, came from what caste? The very lowest caste, the sweeper caste, okay, the street sweepers. And so you'd have like a tribal chief who's converted. And once he's converted, guess what? His whole tribe is now considered to be what? Christian, whether they are Christians at heart or not. Okay, so it's a people movement, and we've got some of that dynamic going on in the ARP Synod. We've got 100,000 members, and you never know the hearts of people, right? I mean, you can say, y'all got, I don't know how many members you've got, but I don't know your heart, and the Lord does. But in that situation, in that culture, it's a pretty pronounced issue. And so we need to work. We need to work while the sun is shining. It's a tribal and it's a shame-based culture. And they don't have good models for servant leadership. They've got the model of the majority community, which is Muslim. And that's a very strongman model. You know? If you got two guys coming, meeting one another, well, somebody's got to determine who's dominant. And you kind of go face-to-face, and then the top dog, you know, okay, I recognize, I bow to you, and then everything works out. That's the only model that our Pakistani Christians see. That's not a servant leadership model. Okay, so we've got our work cut out for us. The good thing is, I think maybe this is because it was a former British colony. There is a premium place upon getting an education. And these Pakistani pastors will get it from wherever they can get it. And sometimes that's not good. Next slide, please. What else does the ARP do in Pakistan? Well, we've got a Christian hospital in Saiwal. Saiwal is in the Punjab. The Punjab is that state. It's a big state. Politically speaking, it's the equivalent of New York and California thrown together in the United States. It's that powerful. It's that state that borders India. It goes from Lahore in the northeast, about halfway down the nation. Saiwal is about 2 hours to 4 hours, depending on the weather, from Lahore, city of about 300,000. That's where the ARPs are strong, in that particular area. We've got a hospital there. We've had it there for a long time. And with that hospital, we have a fully accredited nursing school, which is amazing. Because what we're doing with that nursing school is we are bringing in young Pakistani Christian girls. They come in, they're trained as nurses, and where do they go? Some to our own hospital, but many of them go to hospitals throughout what sort of world? A Muslim world. You've got Christian nurses going to Muslim hospitals with the love of Christ. Okay? So it's a good ministry. And There's also a fabulous discipleship ministry amongst the hospital staff that one of our ruling elders from Canada is doing. And so just thrilled what's going on in the hospital. We also have Christian primary and secondary schools. Now, back early on in our missions work, the ARPs not only established churches, they established schools. And at one time, we had 10 to 12 schools scattered throughout the Punjab. And the country of Pakistan took them back over. They not took them back over. They took them from us. And they nationalized them. Well, I don't know if you follow much of Pakistani politics, but there was a prime minister by the name of Musharraf. Musharraf was a benevolent dictator. But Musharraf was educated in a Christian school in Pakistan. So he had some sympathy with Christians. And through the work of one of our old retired missionaries who had connections with Musharraf, we got several of these schools given back to us. And so now we operate three primary and secondary schools, Saiwal, Chishanwatney, and Burwal, three of the cities in the Punjab. And so that's an ongoing great opportunity. Next slide, please. Just a picture of some of the school children in their uniforms. Next slide, please. Why a hospital and why schools? Well, you're in a Muslim country. And it's illegal to openly share the gospel. So how are you going to try to share the gospel? Having a hospital is a ministry of mercy, yes, but it's also a ministry and opportunity and place for evangelism. Because once they come into your house, once they're in the hospital, you can share the gospel with them there through pamphlets, through the work of chaplains, through videos, etc., etc. So it's a means of evangelism. How about schools? Same thing. If a Christian entity has a school in Pakistan, then that school has to admit people from the entire community. So that means that students who go to our schools, some of them are Christians or from Christian homes, but a good many of them are from what homes? What sort of homes? Muslim homes. And so you bring them into your house and teach them or into our schools, and you've got the opportunity to share the gospel with them. So it gives us that opportunity. So that's why we're still involved in the work. Next slide, please. What will my responsibilities going full-time with World Witness be in Pakistan? Lead and oversee that pastoral leadership training program. Recruit teachers for it. Also recruit U.S. and Canadian pastors to mentor Pakistanis. And then also I'll be given, we've got a guy who's doing this particular work part-time, and he's retiring, and I kind of need to take over his role. And that is to lead the Pakistani staff that oversees the schools. So I'll have the responsibility of being the U.S. oversight over the ministry there. And then I'll work alongside the hospital. Got good relationships with those folk there. Next slide, please. Pakistan, while it is still open to us, is an amazingly strategic field. Very few denominations, if they were to try to really get into Pakistan, could get into Pakistan now. It's not necessarily technically closed, but it's about as close to closed as you can get. And we've been there for over 100 years with a hospital, with schools. And the hospital is such a good hospital, one of the best hospitals in the country, that we have favor. That Muslim city of Saiwal. To give you an idea about the favor, when I've been to Saiwal, and then when you fly into Lahore and you drive down, when as soon as you get to Saiwal, you register with police and they make sure they know you're there and they're going to look out after you. On the way out to go to Lahore, I get military escort. I'll be in a car. There'll be a military truck with two guys with guns in front of us. We'll go about 10 miles. There'll be another truck. And this truck will pull over, the next truck will take us the next 10 miles, and it'll take us all the way to the city limits of Lahore. Why? Because Saiwal so values our ministry and this hospital that they want to protect Westerners. Now, not too many people can say that. So that's a favor from God So we want to use it while, and we want to continue the work there and really focus on those Pakistani churchmen, so that when that day comes when we're no longer allowed to be there, the church will be in good hands. So pray about that. Next slide, please. Third opportunity, and this one, you know, I'm just going to jump on y'all's bandwagon because y'all already are there, but I'm going to expand it from Uganda to Rwanda. Next slide, please. This one is, y'all asked me to come, you asked me to speak, and asked me, you said you got about 45 minutes. I'm thinking, you mean an hour and 45 minutes? Opportunity Rwanda. Iran, trying to get thousands of pastors there. Next slide, please. This was a group picture of some of the rural pastors we were able to have a training session with back in May. Next slide, please. What is this opportunity? Well, it's a new exciting project being approved by the Board of World Witnesses. We're all, you know, everything's in flux right now. It's getting approved, and it is a pastoral training program that has the potential to reach thousands of pastors. It will be a partnership with MT3 missionaries, and I'll explain who they are, and other mission agencies like Trinity Center for World Missions and other groups there in the beautiful country. Next slide, please. What is MT3? Next slide, please. Mobile Theological Training Team of World Witness. I don't know if you've heard the name John Carson. John Carson was an ARP minister who then became the president of Erskine College and Seminary. And then after spending about a decade doing that, he went to World Witness. And he wanted to do theological education in the world. And so he started a team of teachers that travel at the behest of colleges and seminaries throughout the world who need folks to come in and teach modular courses. So John Carson started this ministry that in MT3 has operated in Pakistan, Ukraine, Uganda, Zambia, South Africa. And it's really adaptable to African contexts. Next slide. Sam and Margaret Cotton. Charlie, I think you know Sam. Wonderful brother. He is he's going to be focused in Rwanda. And then David Galetta. David is one of our ministers, and he's from, I think, Maryland. Super sharp, great guy. Next slide, please. Those are our MT3 missionaries at the present. We've got one more guy coming on. World Witness through MT3 and the International Discipleship Coalition is entering into Rwanda for this ministry. Next slide, please. What's the International Discipleship Coalition? Next slide, please. It's a coalition. It's a group of various reform mission agencies and organizations that have already been at work in Africa for years. And now we're just finally talking. Isn't that amazing? Okay. Hey, what are you doing? Oh, where are you doing that at? Oh, okay. How can we? So it's a collection of these agencies, including World Witness, Third Mill, Equipping Leaders International. Mission to the World is also a part of it. Training Leaders International, Trinity Center for World Missions. A network of ministries with a common goal of working together to see Christ magnified in Africa. Next slide, please. Why was it formed? Next slide, please. Just think about some statistics. By 2060, it's estimated that 4 out of every 10 Christians will live in sub-Saharan Africa. 4 out of every 10. And as the church, as y'all know, and as I mentioned in the sermon, as we face more and more opposition in the West, and we are winnowed, the church in Africa will become all the more strategic in advancing the gospel. In the next 40 years, notice this number, it's estimated the church in Africa will grow by not 750,000, but 750 what? Million. Next slide, please. Africa will soon become the center of the Christian world. The question is, what kind of Christianity found there? Next slide, please. So the IDC was formed, exists to further the work of Jesus in Africa by working with national churches, organizations, and institutions and schools, provide high-quality discipleship and ministry training. Sustainability is going to be a mark. Notice the pledge. I like this pledge. I like the way they worded it. It's our pledge to each nation that we will teach historic creedal Christianity as rediscovered in the Protestant Reformation that has served the world and church well for over 2,000 years. Amen. Okay? Next slide, please. Why World Witness and Rhonda? Next one. Well, it's a complex story. It's got about six major components: genocide, a survivor in Erskine, a ministry to children, the thinking of the director of that ministry of children, going from children to a pastor, partnerships with ARP churches he had already connected with, and a benevolent president, the government. Next slide, please. Genocide. Many of you are too young to remember it. I'm not. I remember in 1994 the news coming across my screen. Didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it then. I'm paying a lot more attention to it now. There were a lot of things that went into, that led up to that genocide, and we don't have the time to go into all those. But there was a plane crash. And the plane had, in that plane, it had the president of Burundi and the president of Rwanda. The president of Rwanda at that time was a Hutu. When that plane went down, within hours, groups of Hutu young men were unleashed upon the country, wielding machetes in genocidal fury. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. One survivor, his name is Benjamin Mushuyuki. Next slide, please. He survived by lying down among dead bodies and pretending to be dead. And after it's over, he begins furiously sending out letters to any American college and seminary he could find the address for. He wants to get an education. The only one to respond to him, the only one, was Erskine. Okay? The president of Erskine at that time says, yes, come, we'll take care of you. We'll get you here. We'll get you your education. Next slide, please. And after receiving his education and networking throughout the ARP, Benjamin returned home to Rwanda. Notice I got an exclamation mark. Why do I have an exclamation mark there? Because he went back home. What do many third world folks who come to the U.S. do? They stay. They never go back home. He went back home. Next slide, please. Because he had a heart for orphan children, poor children. Next slide, please. He started Reach the Children International, RCRI. He started ministering. Benjamin's just a mild-mannered, sweet guy who just loves kids. Okay, so he goes back to Kigali, and he just opens his home up to the street urchins, you know, and just loves them, and just it becomes a haven for them. Next slide, please. And then that leads him to, there's this used to be a UN camp for refugees close to the border with Uganda and Congo. Oh, that'd be a great place. And he goes up there and he starts a school, okay, in the western province to a town called Nyabahu. I've got a Ugandan in my congregation. She makes fun of me, by the way, I pronounce African words. So don't y'all make fun of me. You know, just, all right. I've got enough already. Next. That's right. Yeah. There's now a primary school reaching over 300 children there. It's, they're providing a quality Christian education, school uniforms, that's a big deal, insurance for the children and their families, some meals and other needs as able. Next slide. I won't charge extra for this slide. To feed an entire school, a meal costs approximately $250. So if you're ever looking for a mercy ministry thing, say, hey, we'll send $250 to Reach the Children of Rwanda International. They'll feed that entire school. Next slide. Free of charge. Also, you can sponsor. It's a child sponsorship program. There's so many. This one is a mom and pop one by someone we know, and you can really know your child. Next slide. Okay, genocide, survivor in Erskine, a ministry to children, RCRI. Now we come to the bottom level, from child to home to church to pastor. Continue. How do you go from a child sponsorship program to a pastoral training one? How do you make that jump? Next slide. By having a heart open to the needs of the students you're reaching. Next slide. Caring for children led Benjamin to on home visitations. Because you got children who are coming in. They're coming in with what? All kinds of problems. And you're trying to figure out, how can I help with their problems? Well, let me go visit their homes so I can understand their homes. Okay? And if y'all ever go, and we'll sign you up, to go, short-term trip. If you ever go, and you go to this school to do a VBS or something like that, Benjamin will have you go out and do home visitations. And you'll get to see and meet, and you'll get to go into these little huts and hovels, and your heart won't be the same. Next slide, please. Going into the homes, he saw the needs of the families. Where does that lead them? Well, go to the churches. How can the churches help meet these needs? Next slide, please. And that led him to better understand something new intellectually, but it enabled him to better understand the need of the pastors in those churches for an education. And now he knows, okay, I got children, I got families, I got churches, I got pastors and all these great needs. I can't do it all by myself. That leads him to his network that he had formed while in the U.S. with ARP churches to help with the children. Next slide, please. And it led him to We're a Witness to get help with training the pastors. Next slide. Okay? So that gets us to a partnership with the ARP church. Last component of it. Let's up the ante. Next slide. There are all kinds of potential Rwandan trouble spots. Next slide. You've got two predominant tribes, and there's some question as to whether or not they are truly separate tribes, but you've got those who are called Hutus and those who are called Tutsis. And in the genocide, the Hutus perpetrated the genocide against the Tutsis and moderate Hutus. So now, how many years would that be? Well, a couple of decades or more. You've got Hutus still alive who are holding in within themselves what? Guilt. And you got Tutsis who are harboring within their hearts what? Grief or in anger, typically. And they're sitting on the same pews in church together. So just play a game with me. Just imagine, you know, half of this congregation's Tutsi and half are Hutus. And you got all that. Okay? Next slide, please. You've got that dynamic. Then you've got the prosperity gospel, you know, this bane from the West that's poured into the third world, preying on poor people. You know, if there are levels of hell, that's way low. Okay? Next slide, please. You've also got syncretistic religious problems in Africa, and you've got the rise of Islam. The church in Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, is exploding. Guess what else is exploding in sub-Saharan Africa? Islam. Next. This is what happens. I told you go on visitations if you go with Benjamin. Let me give you my one short story. We go with a group of us into this lady's house. It's two rooms. Two rooms, that's it. First room, all that's in the first room is a string running diagonally across the room where she can hang clothes and a wooden stool. Goes through a little hallway into the second room. All that's in that room are a couple of pillows and a few blankets on the cement floor. That's it. And as soon as we come in, Benjamin's practice is to go and, you know, greet the person, find out what they're dealing with, some of their struggles, and then pray with them. Okay? Pretty simple. And she immediately, as soon as we come in, she starts saying, I want to confess to y'all that I'm so tempted to abandon my five children and head off to Kigali because it is hard for me to see them always hungry. Okay? And not knowing where I'm going to get food. Okay? All right, now, picture that replicated throughout a country. And now picture Muslims who come in and they're just loaded with what? Money. We'll take care of that problem for you. Now, of course, we don't want Christians abandoning the faith to go to Islam. But can you see why some of our brothers and sisters might be tempted? Okay? And Islam is coming in. It's being fueled by money from the Arab Emirates. It's being fueled by the North, and it's a problem. Okay, next slide. Dangerous buildings. Next slide. Health standards. Washing stations. Next standard. That leads us to a ruler I used to have in the slide benevolent dictator. I took that out because it might be too incendiary. That might get me in trouble. But we've got a ruler, a president by the name of Paul Kagame. And we've got the Rwanda government. Kagame's a Tutsi from southern Rwanda. His family fled to Uganda when he was young. He rose in the Ugandan army. He's a military genius. He became the leader of the Rwandan Patriotic Force. He actually was educated at the U.S. War College, I think. So he's been educated here, too. But he became the leader of the Rwandan Patriotic Force. He led them back into Rwanda when the genocide started, and they put it down. Okay? So then, of course, he ends up being the vice president. And as vice president, he would continue to lead forays into Zaire, the Congo, towards Hutus who had fled there. So in all that military work, he's trying to keep it from happening again. Then he becomes president and he promotes national unity. Next slide. As president, he has prioritized national development. He wants Rwanda to be the Singapore of Africa. If you know anything about Singapore, it's rich. It is a powerhouse, financial sort of powerhouse. It's clean. And by the way, don't chew gum there. You'll get thrown into prison. It's illegal to chew gum because you might throw it down on the street. And it's tightly controlled. He wants Rwanda to be the Singapore of Africa. Next slide. And it's becoming just that. I mean, I've only been to a couple of African cities, and Kigali's is pretty top-notch. Next slide. That's a street in Kigali. Okay? Next slide. What may hinder that sort of progress? Anything that can refuel that tribal animosity. And oftentimes what happens is you'll get some guy who has nefarious purposes. He becomes a self-appointed religious leader. He gathers around him a group of people, and he uses that then as a political launch pad. Okay? And then poor standards in any aspect of Rwandan life. Next slide. So there's a new law put into place. By 2023, all pastors must have a degree from an accredited, recognized undergraduate institution in order to remain pastors. The law also includes health and safety standards that need to be met. Okay, so if you don't have it, well, we're shutting you down. We're shutting your church down. We're shutting you down. So what's happening? You got thousands of pastors and churches scrambling. They want help. Okay? Next. Continue. And that's the situation. The present executive director of World Witness, Alex Pettit, asked me to go with him to Rwanda back in the spring to assess. Next slide. We traveled with Cottons. We met with Benjamin. Benjamin took us all over. Next slide, please. We met with pastors in Kigali to hear their needs and the way that they are hoping we can come help. Next slide. We did go to the school. Next slide. We ministered children, but, you know, if you ever go on one of those trips and you're ministering to them, what's really happening? You're being ministered to. Yeah, you know, they really did. Next slide. We did go on those home visitations down those volcanic, rocky streets of that former UN camp that's now a little village. Next. We did pastor training sessions there. Next. We prayed and strategized with great men like retired Bishop Rusciana. He's an Anglican bishop. He wrote The Bishop of Rwanda. It's a pretty famous book that describes the genocide. Superman, just a godly man. And he's the one who said, brothers, we want y'all to come. Please come help us. He said, but when you come, recognize you're going to be training pastors who pastor and preach to congregations that are made up of Hutus and Tutsis. And the Hutus have their guilt, and the Tutsis have their grief and anger, and the gospel is the only answer for both. And keep talking. I want to keep hearing you, you know. So it was great to meet with him. Next slide, please. We met with rural pastors. We met with a particular pastor who feels so inadequately prepared to meet the challenges of Islam, but is asking for help in that. Next slide. And we saw and experienced a beautiful country and people. Next slide. It's known as the land of a thousand hills, and it is absolutely gorgeous. You know, I have my conceptions of what Africa looked like, and everything would look like that one. But there's so many varied landscapes. Next slide. Volcanoes and lakes. Next. And animals. All the African animals. Okay. Next slide. But best of all, beautiful image bearers of God. And they welcomed us with love and kindness, and they're asking for our assistance to come alongside of them to help them in training their pastors and keeping their churches open. Help! Next slide. Oh, and by the way, grapefruit and omelets. Charlie, you know what that fruit in the far left corner is? It's known as a tree tomato, and it is delicious. Excellent. So now what's World Witness doing? Well, it's an opportunity to Rhonda. It's part of the Barnabas ministry. Let me talk to you a little bit about personnel and a little bit about planning and then breeze through implementation, please. Personnel, that's going to include the Cottons. They're going to be making Rhonda their main area of ministry. Now, Sam will still probably go to some other nations from every once in a while to do some training. They're thinking through and pray about this for them. They're thinking, they're trying to decide whether or not they need to be based in Rhonda. And they would be, but they've got, one of their children has some health concerns, has got some heart issues. So they're trying to weigh all that. Next slide, please. MT3 will be doing, be involved in this work too. We'll be bringing in people like David Galetta. We'll be bringing in another guy by the name of Justin Bricky to come in and do the modular teaching courses. Next slide. And then I'll have a kind of an overseeing role. I'll continue to help assess the situation and encourage Sam and David particularly. I'm promoting the work like I'm coming to you today. And I'm also joining in those IDC meetings. And I'll be teaching, I'll do a little teaching and mentoring and overseeing. So how about you guys? Next. How can you help? By being a Barnabas. Encouraging through prayer and through your support. Next slide. Pray. Y'all seen the Spunyan quote, haven't you?
Yeah.
Isn't it fabulous? You can do more than pray after you've prayed. But you cannot do more than pray until you've prayed. So when I say, how can you help? And I say, pray. You know, you think, that's what Christians always say. I mean it. That's the work. Okay? Next slide. Pray for the Barnabas ministry and me. In all these three areas. Ministry to our missionaries on the field. We'll keep them there. We've invested so much. Let's keep them there. And I want to help them doing that. Two, Pakistan, while the light is shining, make hay. Rhonda, with this opportunity just flung open, wide open to us. Next slide, please. Pray for Pakistan, for the government and the peace of the Christian church. You know, with Afghanistan, what's going on with Afghanistan, there is the fear that is going to spill over in Pakistan. So we may not have time. The government. It's like, go ahead and pray for the military. The military in Pakistan keeps things sane. Pray also for Rhonda, for children, families, churches, the government there. And particularly for Benjamin and Josephine. There's a power couple. Benjamin, he's this humble, kind, loving guy. Real smart. Josephine's his wife. She's brilliant. She's an architect. She's the first female architect of Rhonda. She was educated in South Africa. She knows Kangame, the president. There's some famous architecture in the city of Kigali. She's had a role in that, in those buildings. They are an amazing couple. Next. So if you ever need a female African, Charlie, for any board position, I can hook you up with one. Pray for the Barnabas ministry and MT3 missionaries, the Cottons, the Galettas, and the Brickies. Support. Support the work of World Witness and my work particularly through knowledge, service, and financial. Next. Knowledge. Keep having knuckleheads like me coming and speaking to you. Okay? It helps. I just think back through all those times that I heard a missionary come. and tell me about what the Lord was doing in a particular country. And through the years, that can build up. You never know what the Lord's going to do with that. Sign up for Barnes Ministry. I've got a sign-up sheet back there. Imagine that. Sign up, and I'm going to start a newsletter this yesterday. Thank you. I'm going to start a newsletter, and hopefully that will go out in January or February. Okay? We'd love for you to be on that list. Got a private Facebook group if you're a Facebooker, and you aren't friends with me, send me a friend request, and I'll put you into that Facebook group. Okay? I would love for you to be a part of that. Sign up for other World Witness newsletters. Go to the World Witness, just Google World Witness, and pull up that website, and you can go and get all kinds of newsletters. You can, you know, see all the various missionaries that are sponsored by World Witness, and each one of them typically has their own newsletter. Knowledge fuels prayer and will drive the hearts and hands. Next slide, please. Service. Consider going. I don't know y'all's philosophy of short-term missions. I think you should go where you can actually help, you know, where you actually are an assistant to something that's needed that the locals can't provide. But what happens when you go is you develop just strong ties with that field and with those missionaries that will last for years and years and years. So consider going. We got missionaries like the Cochran's in England, like the Goodman's in Wales, like the Whitty's in Spain, like Frank Van Dalen in Lithuania, and like Rebecca Carson in Berlin. Okay, help RCRI. You could do that short-term or long-term. And entertain the possibility, and hopefully Andy won't get mad at me, that the Lord might be calling you into missions. I always say that, Andy, because, you know, pastors and sessions want to hang on to people. Mm-hmm. Believe you me, I understand that. But the Lord could be working in the hearts of somebody here already. Next slide, please. And, of course, financial support. So many opportunities. One-time gifts. The World Witness loves those. Lee loves those. Regular ongoing support. Bricks and mortar projects coming down the road. Other personnel support. Next slide. You could support RCRI. They got all kinds of, and if you want to get hooked up with them, let me know, and I'll get you hooked up with them. Okay? Next slide. Support World Witness. Financial gifts for World Witness for Pakistan and Rwandan opportunities. Financial gifts for brick-and-mortar things, like, you know, I know Trinity Center of World Missions doing the campus in Kigali. Fantastic, fantastic, fantastic. Consider supporting future MT3 missionaries. We're going to need more and more guys to teach. I'd be honored if you supported me. Okay, next slide. To be able to do, if you have been paying attention, this is a lot of work. Working with missionaries in Europe, working in Pakistan, working in Rwanda. I can't do it part time anymore. So I'm going full time. So I'm looking for those who will be able to partner with me. Continue. In these strategic fields. Post-Christian Europe. We've got all these missionaries in post-Christian Europe who are planting churches, reformed churches. And, you know, that new generation, the Lord's starting to do something in so many of these places. Pakistan, again, while the sun is shining, let's make hay. Next one. And, of course, Rwanda. Continue. One last, go back to these sort of statistics. In 1910, I don't know if you can read it, the population of Christians in sub-Saharan Africa were 1.4% of the church, total church, 1910. 2010, 100 years later, that has grown to 23.6%. By 2060, what's it going to be? 40%. Okay? Catch the vision of what the Lord's doing. The decline of the church in the West is going to be offset by the growth of the church in places like Rwanda. In many ways, you're looking at the future of the Church of the Lord Jesus Christ. It's not going to be a white man in his 60s. Next slide. So help her and help me and World Witness train her pastor. It's critical. It's going to be her generation that's going to become the strength of the church. And one last one.